Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, we are here.
Yeah, Pete, I'd like to be the Boomer today.
This is
right?
Not the Boomer and the Babe Show, although it is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated.
Right.
It is Exploring Faith with John Mayer and Pete Peters and our guests today, which we'll have John introduce in a minute. Sorry for the bad introduction. I don't know what I did when I put that up.
No, that was a good one.
But that's two shows in a row now I've put up the wrong introduction. Maybe that's a subliminal message, John.
It is sublime, now that you mentioned it. That's right.
It is Wednesday, January 18th, 2011, and we are broadcasting from our studios at the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. John's on their board of directors. I'm on the board of directors for Feeding Arizona, and we're trying to help Jesse do all the good work he does here in the West Valley in Maricopa County with regard to helping the homeless find nutritional and plenty of them meals. So, and I'm Pete Peters, as I mentioned, and Deborah's not here because this is Exploring Faith. And the Boomer and the Babe is more involved in more than just this show. We also have videos that we do for your websites. We publish ebooks and mini books, and we also have promotional products that are available through our auspices. So we are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company, and anything you need for your business that might be of benefit to help you get your name out there, help you promote your business, we are more than willing to help you. Just contact us via boomerandthebabe.com. That's boomerandthebabe.com. John, I'm going to let you take over for a minute here, introduce the guest that you brought. Yep. I know that he is a fellow band member.
Yes.
Of Fossil Fuel.
Fossil Fuel, that's right.
That's your rock and roll band. We got a rock and roll Episcopal priest here.
Right.
And
that and 275 gets you the large latte.
Large latte at Dunkin' Donuts. 275 doesn't get you that at Starbucks, does it?
No.
Go ahead. Introduce your guest.
Okay. Well, hey, my good friend Jim Rumpeltis is with us today. He's here in the studio. And as Pete mentioned, we're members of Fossil Fuel. And I would like to add original members.
Okay.
Of Fossil Fuel.
Very good.
That's right.
Founding members.
Founding members.
Oh, my
exactly.
Goodness.
Exactly.
So, therefore, you are founding fathers as well, huh?
So to speak.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, John's a founding father.
I'm not sure what was lost, but I might have found something. Nonetheless, Jim is here to share with us today about his faith and how he really counted on that in a lot of places for his work. And he's had 30 plus years in municipal government, county and city government, and retired about 4 years ago from the city of Surprise as the city manager, where he oversaw phenomenal growth. Went from, what was it, Jim, 50,000 to 120?
About that.
Yeah.
About that. I started in 2001 as the assistant city manager. The numbers are a little fuzzy, but
yeah,
in the neighborhood of 40,000 population, and when I left in 08, it was over 100,000, so it's more than double size.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
A lot of growth in the organization and in the community.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting time to be part of that happened.
I'll say. Excitement in the broader sense of the word, but we can get to that as we go along. Well, Jim, you have a very, I think, pretty full and interesting background. Would you fill us in a little bit on it? Right after college, you worked for
I went to, you know, I'm a child of the 60s.
Yeah.
And grew up in the state of Washington, and I went to the University of Washington. And, you know, back in those days, there was a lot of social change, discussions about saving the environment and social change. Going to the University of Washington, I ended up as an urban planning major. Going to change the world, going to make a difference. So I got out of college and really wasn't sure the direction I wanted to go. Maybe needed some maturing, and I went into the VISTA program, the domestic version of the Peace Corps,
right.
And ended up in East LA as a planner, and it was one of the best things I've done in my life. And as I tell the story, I probably the person I helped most was myself.
Yeah.
And it was the time that I grew up. I became a little more mature, learned about different cultures, different people. I explored a real interesting part of the country, Southern California, and you know, ended up going to grad school in Southern California in public administration. That's where I really got my career going, and ended up with a graduate degree and then getting into municipal management. Started out back in my hometown of Spokane, Washington, in the county commissioner's office. Kind of a fast-track junior executive position.
Yeah.
And really got just thrown into some great work and working with some great people there. So that was, I began my career in Spokane and, you know, kept, you know, kind of climbing the career ladder, you know, as a lot of people have done throughout their careers. Spokane was my first stop. In that type of work, you end up moving around a bit. I guess in the when you're a pastor, you end up doing that too.
Right.
Was in Spokane for 7 years, then went to the west side of the state of Washington, to the city of Port Angeles, where I worked for county government also and was the county administrator for Clallam County. Spent 15 years there. By that time, married two children. And in my late 40s, thought, well, you know, is this all there is? Will I retire here, end my career here? And the family encouraged me to move along. They were interested in a more urban environment, and we ended up in the Phoenix metro area with the City of Surprise. Started in 01 as the assistant manager. 2 years later, with the departure of the manager, ended up as the city manager for about 5 years. So that's kind of a summary of the,
yeah.
of my
yeah.
career.
Yeah. Oh, that's an incredible career. That's it's got its peaks and then its long periods of really sinking in with some depth.
Well, and I'll just throw in, since retiring, I've done some substitute teaching.
Yeah.
I described it. I've been an interim manager in two different communities in Arizona. Mm-hmm. When I've been in those positions, people will say, well, hold it. Now, what is that? And I go, well, you know, it's kind of like a substitute teacher. You know, you come in, you fill in between the permanent folks. And, you know, the good and the bad is, you know, you're only there a short period of time, so you really can't make a big difference. The good is you're only there a short period of time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're more apt to maybe be a little more open about what needs to be done, or if mistakes are made, or just dealing with ticklish issues where if your job depends on it, you may not be as vocal,
right?
Which that kind of fades into the discussion of you know, how you make decisions and is a leader, and where your spiritual beliefs come in on that,
right? Yeah, which of course is the heart of what we want to get to today. Well, is there, over these years, is there an incident that comes to mind where you had to make a decision, you're on the line, made a huge difference in the way things would go, and you really needed to stand on your faith or get some spiritual guidance or something before making that decision?
Well, this last job I just had with the town manager of Dewey Humboldt, what I interviewed there, there was a similar question that came up during the interview process, and I said, well, if you type my name into Google, the majority of the information that comes out is over an issue with the city of Surprise where I addressed the council about some things that I had a difference of opinion about. And it was just the relationship between myself and the council and some council members and how they'd dealt with the process, the legislative process of the council. And I publicly addressed that and was critical of some people and some things. And that, you know, back to my spiritual beliefs, you know, where did that come from? Why did that happen? I think a prayer is probably one of the strongest things that, as I reflected on this topic today, you know, myself, just by myself, and then with family members, we prayed, you know, maybe not hours, but well, if you added it all up, probably
sure.
hours over what to do with that particular situation. And, you know, other people prayed for us. I prayed about that and afterwards prayed a lot about it. So
yeah.
So prayer is I think, for me, a key component about dealing with decision-making, dealing with tough, complex issues in the roles I've been in. What happens is, and I think it's common in a working world, is there's this pull, kind of the politics and money of the world tugging against what the right thing to do is, and you know, often many of us are in that position of wow, you know, I really need this job. You know, my bosses are telling me to do X, and I really feel in my heart that I should be doing Y.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what should I do?
Yeah,
and that's just something that I found my spiritual life was something that was helpful in sorting that out, because it's not a clear cut decision. You know, working situations are complex. Sometimes the messages are a little fuzzy in terms of, you know, what the circumstances are.
That's right.
Did you ever have a situation when bosses were saying X, your inner voice was saying Y, that you could actually compromise the two and make it so that you were satisfied with the decision as well as your supervisor being satisfied with the decision? And what did that take to get to that middle ground?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes. That was always my objective, is that, you know, I would hear something. And usually what would happen would be you hear something, and you're outraged. You're like, wow, that's just wrong. I just can't believe that. That would be something that would be the direction we're going with an organization. It usually took some time and patience.
Yeah.
And that's, you get the what a prayer that I often use is prayers for patience and prayers for wisdom. Is you, a little time goes by, you gain more information about situations, you talked with folks, figure out where they're coming from, what they need to meet their needs, and what I found is that. Oftentimes, I would address they're asking for why, and my heart is telling me X. Is we end up maybe learning about each other, and figuring out that, you know, maybe the original direction wasn't the best, and maybe even my original thoughts that I had in my heart were not especially well informed. And I wouldn't call it a compromise, but gaining more information about situations, learning their perspective. I would say, percentage-wise, 75% of the time we ended up figuring it out. And it took a lot of, to prayer and patience.
Well, regardless of what an individual or a city municipal body or whatever would call it, whether it's prayer, whether it's just examining the subject, examining the topic, trying to find other routes, all parties have to be open to discussion and open to the possibility of something other than the viewpoint. Now, it can come to anybody in any number of ways, and you could call it whatever you want to call it, but I think it's a mindset of the individuals involved that they've decided that, well, maybe we should take a look here and go and see if there's a different way that we can incorporate all of or some of all of the various aspects. And that takes a certain personality that can do that, and not everybody can do that, as witnessed by what's going on in the political climate today. I mean, it's just, my way or the highway with some of these people, and there is no discussion.
Yeah.
But discussion is really, I think, the basis for a lot of things happening and not being stalemated.
I think when it becomes challenging is where you don't have that time to discuss and to listen to where people are coming from, whether there's an urgency to decision and needs to happen immediately. And so I've been there where I've made that call, and that is really difficult.
Yeah.
I'll look back on those saying, wow, I wish I'd had a little more time.
Yeah.
And I've blown it. I've made some judgment calls, and they were wrong.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as just outer safe, is it?
No.
Yeah, that's true. One question comes to my mind as you're describing this. Have you ever had an opportunity or an incident where you need to talk with somebody because they want to go in a different direction than you want to go? You've been praying about it. Did you ever hear the voice of God speak to you through that other person in a way that was surprising?
Wow. Yeah, let me think. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of it in that.
Right.
Although back to what I was saying earlier, discussion, learning where people were coming from, is something that I always learn. I talk to people, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. That's new information.
Yeah.
And maybe that was God talking to me through that. If I hadn't had this conversation, I'd made a bad decision, and that would have been really unfortunate.
Yeah.
And so maybe God was speaking to me in those.
What happens when you're feeling that you're receiving a message as an answer to your prayer, and the other person on the other side of the issue is receiving a message which is the answer to their prayer,
and
the messages and the messages are 180 degrees out from one another?
Well, here's a story. This is over 20 years ago, and
then we're safe. Good. Okay.
Yes, they were safe. Over 20 years ago, I was a young manager, and this was the first person that I was going to have to fire. And that was one tough duty. And we'd been dealing with this. There was a lot of legal issues involved. I won't even get into what location it was in, even 20 years later. We had gone around legal issues, and he needed to be terminated. And this was an individual that was older than I am today. He was in his 60s. He'd been with the organization for 20, 25 years. He'd done a lot of great things for the community. But because of some specific things, needed to be terminated. And I remember that day. And this person was a highly spiritual person. And I know that he had had probably prayed about it, and I'd prayed about it, and I think we were in that spot where we disagreed on that. And you know, I look back on that, I don't think there was another way I could have dealt with it. I think it was best for the organization. And I think that's where key executives, you know, it's lonely at the top. You have to make those tough calls, and there might be someone that you disagree with, but then for the good of the community, for the good of the other employees, you need to do what's right. So those are tough. And
that's why you get paid the big bucks.
You get paid the big bucks. And you know, back to the spiritual foundation, I think it, for me, was essential. I couldn't have done it without it. I'm in a Bible study with my church. We meet every other week. And that group evolved to be kind of informal set of advisors. We'd go over a Bible passage each session, and oftentimes they deal with real life situations. You know, how would you deal with it? We went over the Ten Commandments, and you know, you go through the Ten Commandments, and many of those are very, very straightforward. You know, things like about that, you know, you shouldn't kill people and things like that. But there's some of them that they get in some areas that aren't real clear cut, and we had some great discussions. And then you say, okay, how do we apply that to the working world? Something that I concluded from that I promoted among my executive team was, you know, and we've all worked in environments where you complain about different things that happen, and you often will complain about people. You'll gossip. You'll talk about, you know, old so-and-so, my coworker, my boss, the other person. You know, why did they do that? You know, I don't really like that. Make fun of them. Make jokes about them. And it just kind of hit me one day. I go, that's wrong. I don't think God wants us to talk that way. And I think you find in an organization, this is a very common working environment for that to happen. And I said, you know, why don't we not do that? And I put a jar out on my conference table and said, okay, every time you talk poorly of someone else, you got to put a dollar in the jar. And it became a fixture in the last few years with the City of Surprise. And we had some fun with it. There might have been a heated meeting over a particular topic, and you know, the next morning we'd have the group in there, and somebody just pull out their wallet and put it on the table. I said, "I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to be putting a few dollars in the pot today. I got to blow off some steam." But that's where just my spiritual foundation with my Bible study group helped me deal with those real complex work situations. You know, it might be a one-on-one relationship with a person. It might be a big policy issue facing our community. But you know, the Bible and how you apply that was very, very essential. And my group would help me kind of sort that out too. Life's complex. The Bible often can be complex too, and how you apply it.
Get back to that jar for a minute. Did you take checks and did
there
you?
There were IOUs in that jar.
Was there a credit card processing machine right next to it?
No. Check.
I'm going to run up a $100 tab today. Put it on my card.
Well, and that's in terms of where you're coming from spiritually. I was never on a soapbox.
Yeah.
At least my opinion was. But I felt that people knew where I was coming from. I don't think I preached to my coworkers or just the people I worked with.
But
I think that they felt they knew where I was coming. And there was, from time to time, we would have groups of employees pray together over just sometimes for no particular reason, and sometimes over a very specific topic. It kind of came and went depending on circumstances. That was something that I felt very beneficial for me.
That was kind of a question that came to mind with regard to the separation of church and state, and you hear all these things about prayer in the workplace and in schools and so on and so forth. Was that ever something that yourself being a man of faith and others, obviously, based on the fact that there would be some prayers that would be offered, was that ever the case where somebody would squawk about that?
I never had to deal with that as an issue of a church and state separation. That was the one time in my career I was on the board of the YMCA in Port Angeles, and the mission statement for the organization had included to follow the teachings of Jesus Christ. Well, there were some folks in the community that wanted that taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I, at the time I was the board president, one time. I might have been a past board president, but I was a key leader in that group, and I took a stand where it says that. I think it ought to stay in. It is the Young Men's Christian Association.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Well, then why are you becoming a member of the Young Men's Christian Association?
so that was the one instance. Other than that, it was never an issue.
Plus, it's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Well, we didn't that particular Y. There were no rooms.
No, right. Okay.
But it was a great place to hang out.
We're not going to break into song.
No,
we're
not. No, not this morning. No.
Thought you were going to, guys, you're going to go get your drums and your guitar and start breaking into song.
Hey.
No, we don't know that song.
No,
yet.
We don't. We probably are not going to either.
You're not going to learn it anytime soon.
But I'm not going to say any. Well, whatever. Kind of a wider scope in some of this. Kind of flowing out of the jar situation. Would you say that one of the ways that your faith influenced what was going on in any office that you worked was that without making a legalistic proselytizing situation, you were still able to engage and influence the culture of the working environment along the lines of your faith?
Well, one thing, it may be basic, it may be fairly narrow, is using profanity in the workplace.
Yeah.
I suppose in my 30 years, there might have been a handful of words that came out, but generally that was something that was not part of my vocabulary. You know, where that fits in is a spiritual foundation. One could argue that you could use inappropriate language and still be very spiritually based and have Christ in your heart. But I would argue not. That's not appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you're the one in authority, you're the leader or whatever, the supervisor, that you really create the culture. Part of which would be a culture of respect for each other, respecting other people, which is where a heavy use of profanity is pretty disrespectful towards other people.
I would absolutely agree with that. So that's one area that I would say I didn't use profanity. Now I'll tell a story. I worked for a board of county commissioners in Port Angeles, and one particular individual used profanity significantly. And we got a new board member on the board, Martha Ireland, who I'm still in touch with. We were good work friends. She called him out on it. There you go. I may have fallen a little short. I didn't use profanity myself, but then here's another person at work that did use it, and I you know, he was my boss. You know, that's getting one of those, you know, it was wrong. Am I going to call him on it? I did, and she called him on it. And you know, I really respect Phil for, he was like, wow, you're right. I shouldn't be talking that way.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that worked out really well.
Yeah, that's good.
So that was.
Are there any guys who didn't stop using profanity once they were called out on it?
I can't think of
maybe
that.
Not.
I mean, to be in a work environment to call someone out on poor language is, I would think, is a rarity.
Yes.
In today's world.
Yes.
especially depending on the area you work. I know my son is served in the military and is currently in the reserves, and we talked about that. But that's part of the military culture.
Yeah.
Is the use of profanity, and I went, wow, that's just, that is unique, because I don't believe the rest of the working world it does happen, but I think it is not tolerated.
Right. It's not part of the culture.
Not part of the culture. No.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah. And in fact, my son and I talked about that. Would it be appropriate to bring that up? And he was like, oh, absolutely. To say, I don't appreciate the use of that language in this work environment, he said, you would not get very far if you did that.
They would tell you what to do with the language.
Yes,
and where to put it in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, I have not been in the military myself, but the way my son describes it, that is a deep tradition of the military.
Wow. Well, you don't see that on the unit or other military-based TV shows, do you?
No, but you see other things on the news that that indicate conceivably that is part of the culture.
Right.
By what you see being enacted on the news, actually on the news, with regard to what they did with these corpses and stuff like that. I mean, if they're gonna do that, the other stuff is just.
Well, in talking with my son about this, you know, if one theory would be, this is serious business, and in the line of work they're in is highly emotional and very serious, and that. That may be the reason for the culture allowing that, that may be something that, maybe it's not that big a deal given the magnitude of the task.
What they're being asked to do.
Yeah.
By comparison to the actions that they have to take.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jim, I have a question for you about your time in East Los Angeles working with Vista. Is there anything that you gained, took out of there, stuff you saw, learned, or reformed in some way that was present with you all the way through your work life and then even today?
He just sold that Cadillac just the other day, as a matter of fact. I bought it.
Well, my East LA experience, what I've kept is an understanding of partially a different culture, and then people that are just living on very modest means. I grew up in the suburbs and went to college, lived in a fraternity house, not an environment that, although there were some folks just barely getting by there, but it was people like me, people that from upper middle class backgrounds that were in college. So I'd never been exposed to that. And then going to East LA with Vista, got to know individuals from a lot of different backgrounds. A woman that I ended up dating, I worked with her sister. We ended up dating. Well, these two women lived with their mother, and their mother had four jobs. She was a hairdresser. She sold Tupperware. She was an aide at a school, and she was a bill collector for a doctor. And they lived in a two bedroom apartment. And was just something. And then these were my kind of support base that I had that were just the greatest people in the world that were very bright and fun people to be around, and she had four jobs, and was supporting her daughters and trying to make a go of it.
Yeah.
And just you learn that wow, there is many different people and lifestyles, economic level in this country. And so I guess what I've taken with me as I've been in government serving a very diverse public is to know that there is that diversity out there, ethnically, economically, and I think that served me well to understand those differences. You get to the top point in the organization, and it's easy to become isolated, forget about the needs of those that maybe don't have what many other people have.
Right.
So that's probably the answer to your question. What I've taken with me is that it's a big world out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of diversity, and that was just a small little snapshot that I got.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I could have experienced a lot more and learned a lot more, but that's what I've kept with.
Yeah, that's great. So it's like it increased your motivation to be working in a way that serves as many as possible. You know, that no one particular section needs to be only served.
Here's a conversation I was having with a friend of mine whose daughter is applying to college, and this is someone that makes a good living, not a great living, but a good living, and he's trying to get his daughter into college. We're talking about scholarships and how you can get money to help, and I was pretty straightforward with him, saying you know these scholarships, sure there are some that maybe are unique and it's kind of that home run that maybe you can hit, that's a unique situation, but the people that really need support in going to higher education are people like the family I just described, the two daughters and the mom with four jobs. It's not the middle class college educated person that has a job with benefits. And sure, there are bright kids that have that background that maybe have achieved greatness that should be supported. But I went, hey, come on, this is. Yeah, we really need to help the kids that truly have come from backgrounds that are very modest.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a particular doctrine or idea out of the Christian faith that kept motivating that for you throughout the years?
Well, yeah, I don't know about through the years, but about 5-6 years ago, I went to Uganda with our church. Yeah. There was three of us that went there, and it was kind of like my VISTA experience. I don't think we really helped anyone other than ourselves in learning about a different culture and where people are coming from. But there was a pastor that we met with, and he went through past the Bible, a number of passages dealing with widows and orphans, and that. Just the responsibility that Christians have in taking care of widows and orphans, and then who are what is this term widows and orphans? What does that really mean? Well, maybe it means the mom with the four jobs with the two daughters. This particular woman was divorced, but. And you get into the theology of that, were these daughters orphaned? Not really, but it's that message there is we have a responsibility to take care of the unfortunate.
Sure.
The people that don't have that traditional family and financial support.
Yeah, absolutely. It's excellent. In fact, I think one of the names of God in Scripture is Defender of Widows and Orphans. Yeah.
So that in recent years has really stuck with me.
Yeah. Wow.
You say when you went to Uganda, I was struck by the fact that you said, "Who was I really helping?" Possibly yourself or yourselves, whoever the group was that went. But you are you indicating that there was really nothing that you people could do to help the people of Uganda? What's behind what you said there?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
There were two other individuals from the church that I go to, the church in Glendale, Faith Bible Church, and we went there to support a program. Well, let me back up. New Hope Uganda is a orphanage school that was started by an individual about 20, 25 years ago. And his name is escaping me. Jay Danger is his name. He'd grown up as a missionary in Africa, had come to the States, got his education, and went back with an orphanage in Uganda to serve kids that had, the result of Idi Amin's rampage there, killing a lot of the parents. So there were a lot of orphans. Now that's 20, 25 years ago. It's evolved now that it's serving orphans as a result of many health problems, AIDS, malaria. And the purpose of this trip was to support a program that was to reach out to the community where the school and orphanage was located to promote better health practices. There is a network of pastors in the area, and they were gathering for a conference to promote prevention of malaria, AIDS, and even some safer cooking methods, and that New Hope would be the sponsor of that program. The logic being, well, maybe there wouldn't be as many orphans if we, address the root problems of these, being malaria and the AIDS, some other health issues in these communities. So I went with Tom and John to Uganda to be present at the 2-day seminar, three day seminar that they had on this. It's like a public health program, and we were there to support that effort and to listen to the pastor to see how we could help that effort. And what I've learned about Africa is to say we have the answer, we have the money, we're here, and we're going to solve this for you has not been working.
Yeah,
it's better you go and you listen and try to find the appropriate role for the support from the United States, from a church. And so that was the purpose of my visit to Uganda, was to be there to listen. And sat through the three-day seminar, learned about the issues facing them. The follow-up was that it was going well, and the program did take off and did take place. So, I didn't build a house. I didn't dig a ditch. I didn't teach a class. I didn't preach a sermon. I was there to listen about their needs. And I think that's where, my statement was, I think just understanding what the culture is in Uganda, especially in this area, was very helpful. Now, there may be some time in my life in the future where that knowledge I could use to maybe directly more serve folk in Uganda or possibly here in the Phoenix area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I find that interesting because I am really of the firm belief myself that there are people in need all over this globe. But there are people in need, legitimate need, right here in our own backyard. And somewhere I've heard or read that there's this thing that charity starts at home. And I think if we had, it's just my feeling, if we had the ability or the willingness to take care of what we have to take care of here, and once we've got that handle so that we can be in a much better position to go elsewhere, that maybe that should be the way it's focused. But I mean, there are always going to be organizations that want to go overseas to do whatever they're going to do there, which I'm not saying is not good work, but my thought is, what are we doing here? And that's why I like this food bank, because it's here.
Yeah.
It's local. It's people that I may well know that have a need for the services of the food bank. And that's where my belief is. So not that there's anything wrong with any group that goes overseas. It's just, I just heard just the other day, within the last 3 or 4 days, about all the money, the millions and billions of dollars that went to Haiti after the catastrophe there, after the earthquake. And none of it is going to the people. And the people are still living in the same squalor they lived in, and in the same fallen buildings that they were living in when they were found after the earthquake. What happened there? You know, what happened there? If that's the way we were going to do it, now I'm getting editorial. If that's the way we were going to do it, then we should have done that same thing with the money here. All those trailers that sat sinking in the mud after Katrina. What's going on here? And that's why I think that we have to have a greater focus here. And then what's left over, we can go over there with it. But
I agree. And that's my trip to Uganda, I think, puts things in a context. It gives you perspective as you come home and try to help here at home.
Yeah, and see that there's still a lot of places here that are probably not that much better than Uganda.
I suppose so. The conditions in Uganda.
Well, I'm sure they're pretty. There's squalor and whatever else.
And there are people in Uganda that do very well.
Yes.
Generally, Uganda is a pretty tough, poor country, but there are people that do well. And then generally, the United States is a fluent country, but there are many people that need.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things, Pete, just following from what you were describing, one of the things that, well, somebody here at the food bank can kind of pick up on fairly easily if you live around here is you can donate money to the food bank, and that's one thing. You can come in and put cans onto the shelf or help the organization in some way. That's another thing. But to take a food box out to a young mother's car who has three kids, the car's barely running, and she's maybe don't have shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Look in her eyes. Get the food into her car so she can get it home. That's something else altogether.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a completely different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is something what you had in Uganda there, and then you bring that home. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of choked up by the whole thing.
Oh, I tell you, I have just been fighting this little thing that I thought I got rid of it, but all of a sudden
it came back.
It rears its ugly head. Yes. I have to apologize for all
that's all right.
Hacking, coughing, and wheezing. So,
Jim's brought some notes.
I brought some notes here.
Go ahead.
A few things that I thought about. One thing that was helpful, especially in Surprise, is there were some pastors from the community that I would meet with from time to time and ask them to pray for the city, and they said absolutely, and they would do that. That was something that I think was very helpful.
Yeah.
A few of those folks were good advisors, good sounding boards. As you have these complex issues, that oftentimes the right answer is tough to decipher, and it's good to talk to the committee pastors about, okay, well, you know, am I missing something here? Is this something that you could, you know, add some perspective to this for me? And they were very helpful.
Wow, that's great.
Taking the word of God, and then also the needs of the community, and with a sense for maybe the politics of the situation. You know? Yeah, there one in particular I met with a couple times. You know, it was like, am I crazy? Am I, you know, I'm looking at it this way. And he was very supportive. He goes, no, you're right on. Because I was getting into that, you know, my bosses want X and my heart's telling me Y.
Yeah.
And you push up against that for weeks, months, and years. It's a tough road. It's a tough road to go. Your spiritual foundation is attacked. That might be too strong a word, attack, but that's probably a lesson for all of us. If you're in a working world, to try to do what's right.
Sure.
If not attacked, it's certainly tested.
It's tested. That's a better word. Tested.
Yeah. As the city manager, who did you report directly to?
The city manager, form of government, reports to the city council. So with the city of Surprise, it's the mayor and the six council members. It's that form of government is modeled after the corporate model, where you have a board of directors and then a CEO, and that's the way that works. I think people often think about a city government. They say, well, the mayor is the head chief executive of the city. Well, and that is true in some cases. New York City, large cities, New York City, Chicago. That form of government, they call a strong mayor form of government. In Arizona, 99% of the cities are the city manager form of government, where you have a board of directors, the mayor, and city council, and you have a city manager who is the chief executive. So the city manager, city of Phoenix, there's a city manager reports to the board of directors, the mayor, and the council. And the mayor... Yeah, I'm not an expert on the city government in Phoenix, but is a full-time job, but it is not the chief executive of the
chairman of the board.
Chairman of the board. There you go. Chairman of the board. And in Surprise, the mayor is a part-time position.
Yeah.
That is a very important leadership role in the community and the organization. Sets the tone. Represents the city government, presides over the council meeting, is a very key, but is not the chief executive of the organization. So the city manager in Surprise reports to the city council. There's a dozen or so department heads, you know, fire chief, police chief, public works director, parks and rec, finance, there's a whole slew of all the service departments that then report to the city manager or the assistant city manager. There's an organization structure where you'll have one or two assistant city managers that will help you oversee the different departments.
Okay.
How does the fire department and the police department their budgets and whatever they want to have done, they have to get that come through the city manager's office, is that correct?
The budget process for most of the Arizona cities, they're on what they call a fiscal year that starts July 1st and then ends at the end of June. And the budget is adopted sometime in the spring. So the fire budget, like all the other department budgets, the city manager in most Arizona cities gives a balanced budget to the city council for consideration sometime in the spring. They debate it. They can throw the whole thing out and do up their old budget, but that is the starting point. Is the city manager will present a balanced budget to the council. In my years in Surprise, the budget adopted by the council was often very close to the one submitted by me. There was, you know, some tweaking done, but back to the fire, you take in consideration the population, where the homes are located, response times of the fire trucks. There's a mathematical formula that's used. You know, you have so many homes, there should be so many staff, there should be so many truck stations, response time. There are software programs that will help you dictate that. Although it does come down to some tough decision making. As we built the city, that was something that was it was a challenge. One particular issue, notable issue, is in Sun City Grand. Back in the early 2000s, there was a fire station that was put together partially by Del Webb Corporation on Reams Road that served Sun City Grand. But as Sun City Grand grew, there was a need for a fire station within the boundary of Sun City Grand. And there was a spot that was set aside for that. And the people that were neighboring to that spot were, well, some of them, I think some of them were very interested in having a fire station there. And then there were some that were not interested.
They were the NIMBYs.
Well, you could call them that. and that was something, you know, maybe back to where, you know, your heart tells you one thing and, you know, other folks are saying something else. I mean, it was just one of those things where a fire station needed to go there.
By the way, would Pete just have had to pay a dollar for that?
Maybe. He didn't use a particular name. But
right.
I might give him a break on that one.
First offense against.
But wow. that was an issue where there was a piece of property. It was available. The homeowners association in Sun City Grand was willing to sell it to the city, and there were some folks in the area that were said, you know, we really don't need a fire station here. And there were a number of very heated community meetings that happened. I recall one of them at the Cimarron Center. The meeting was to start, say, at 6 o'clock, and I remember I got there early, about 5:30, and there were, you know, 200 people there half an hour early.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there was maybe 500 people. I you know, maybe I'm exaggerating, but there were like 500 people there.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, many of them wanted a fire station, and a few did not want a fire station in that location.
Yeah.
And it was one tough meeting. And you know, the kind of the end of the story on this is we're in the middle of trying to sort this out, and a home in Sun City Grand caught fire and burned to the ground.
Wow.
And after that, in fact, I know the folks. I didn't know them at the time, but I know the folks that happened to. And in fact, I can see the flames from the second story deck of my home, which is near Sun City Grand. And it would, to see flames, you know, a couple hundred feet in the sky was scary. And after that incident, things moved ahead pretty smoothly.
Yeah.
I think the folks were like, okay, we do need a fire station here.
Well, that's an incredible example. My understanding, too, which is not that deep, but something like even deciding on the width of a road plays into how fast can this traffic flow and how easily can a fire truck get down the road. Too wide and people are speeding. Too narrow, the fire truck can't get through well.
That in the Marley Park community.
Uh-huh.
Marley Park, which DMV, which developed that, they're very innovative in their configurations of neighborhoods. They like to look at it in a unconventional way, you know, including some kind of traditional modes. Marley Park actually has alleys, which you really don't find in today's modern subdivision, but they've used alleys. And the configuration of their streets were very unconventional. And the fire service took issue with that, in that the width of the road in some places, the fire service was not happy with in terms of accessibility of fire trucks. They thought, well, there may be some hindrance of accessibility to these neighborhoods. And we went around and around, and the fire service was convinced that it would be okay. And so this somewhat unconventional mode of, the widths of the streets within Marley Park are different than the rest of the city as a result of that. And, you know, I guess time will tell
Yeah.
You know, it only takes one tragic episode to say, wow, you know,
yeah.
the screen wasn't wide enough, the response time,
yeah.
you know, was deficient.
Or if it's too wide and people are speeding, it takes one pedestrian.
Yeah, that's a whole debate that's beyond me.
Oh,
that's
where your faith comes in.
You're right, that's where your faith comes in. But those tough issues that are very complex, there's oftentimes no right answer.
Yeah.
You have two sides with very legitimate points, and you know, using your spiritual base to help sort that out, for me, was very helpful.
Yeah.
So then, do you put it all in the hands of God, just flip a coin?
Well, a prayer that I would often use would be to give me patience and to give me wisdom. And the wisdom, I think that's God is helping you gain the knowledge that you need to make
yeah.
that decision.
Yeah.
Or to help others make that decision.
Right. And the skill to use it well, all of
yeah.
that. Sure.
What is that prayer with regard to, and the closing line is, and the ability to know the difference.
Yeah,
that
serenity prayer.
Is that what it was? Serenity
yeah,
prayer, that's what it was, yeah.
Good old Reinhold Niebuhr. You can just count on him every time.
Reinhold Niebuhr.
He wrote that, that's right.
All right, well.
Used in recovery now, AA and all that.
Oh, is that where it's used?
Usually how they end there, yeah. Huh. Hey, I have one more question for Jim.
Sure.
So we shouldn't go over time, but maybe we will.
We already are. That's okay.
Oh, okay, all right. Here.
We're good.
Jim, you're a couple years out now, a few years out, had a few interim experiences, which is also perspective giving, I guess. Do you have, let me just say, the reason I'm asking this, because we've talked about it from time to time, particularly in relationship to some Leadership West activities and working on different things that they have there. Do you have a vision of what a city could become, a municipality could become, that is driven by your faith?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think the key driven by faith is a partnership between the government and the community in serving citizens.
Yeah,
and that's where there's you know, the days of money available, you just collect higher taxes and it goes to a government, and then the government hires people and the government goes out and you know, does services for people. Those days are in the past. I think the future is partnership with faith-based organizations, churches, nonprofits. The food bank here is a great example of a partnership, just working with community to provide a service, and I think that's the future model that we're looking at. The challenge of that is I think leadership is harnessing, you know, connecting the leaders of the community, bringing them together to provide the service, to raise the resources, to have the partnership with whether it be state government or a local government, or I suppose even the federal government. Pulling that all together is very complex.
Yeah.
You know, we talked with Jesse Ramirez here at the food bank, and he's got to, you know, have a computer brain to figure out how to keep track of all the different players and
yeah.
donors and volunteers, and this is just one example,
right?
But I see that as being the future of local communities, is having many, many organizations like Valley View Food Bank.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, powerful.
Well, yeah. It is, and I think one of the toughest things that is going to be a hurdle that has to be overcome is defining those leaders
yeah.
that are of a mind to put their own personal gain aside for their own personal either political power or monetary power or whatever, that are actually willing to work for the good of the community rather than the good of themselves. That's where I think, unfortunately, it has a real chance to fall apart.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and maybe that prayer is the one that is the one that would work to help find some of those folks.
Yeah. And it's not entirely, if you don't mind my just saying it just for conversation, moralistic, where I choose for the good of others to not put myself in. But it's a deeper paradigm shift. Somebody may even choose to go for the good of the community, but have a hierarchical leadership pattern in their mind, which means I need to get into a position of power to make the decisions for the good of all. And just an entirely different paradigm of collaboration and flat leadership may be what's needed to get to that kind of vision.
It is truly a challenge. A story I'll tell is that in the city of Surprise, there's an organization called Young Life, and it's a Christian outreach organization for teenagers based at the high school level. And it's been going about 4 years in Surprise. And a friend of mine lives in one of the retirement communities, and I sat down with him, myself and the Young Life leader, and said, hey, you know, we'd like to connect with some of the folks you know in the retirement community. And he said, let me talk to some of my friends, and I'll get back to you. And a couple weeks later, he got back to me and said, I talked to some of my friends about you coming and speaking to us, and he said, they said, no, they had no interest in that at all. And we weren't asking for money.
Right.
We weren't asking for anything other than we'd like to tell you about what we're doing with the teenagers in Surprise. And the response was, we have no interest in that at all.
We really don't care.
Don't care. And, you know, I know,
what are you telling us for?
I know there are some tremendous volunteers and people that really help the community in the retirement community. I see as a challenge, especially in Surprise, that there is a bit of a wall there between the retirement communities and the families, and bridging that is a challenge. That's where, you know, back to my Vista volunteer experience, where, you know, the mom with four jobs and two kids should have a connection with the, you know, someone like me, a person that's retired from a long career that maybe could offer some help, not just monetary, but even just wisdom.
Sure.
Perspective.
Yeah. Just sure. Just a thought process.
Yeah.
Just thought process.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, John. Do you have anything else for us today?
Hey, I'm good. Now.
That's great.
Yeah, I've got Jim's vision for the future of the city. So
I'm
ready to run with it.
You're going to run for office?
No.
No. Oh.
That would be hierarchical.
Exactly. Well, Jim, thanks for coming in today. It's been a lot of fun having you here. A great conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
And our listeners have always seemed to find something, we hope, and I think today they found some other information that's good. And at least, if nothing else, it might just lead them to a little bit of conversation about some different things, and that's what we're here for. You've been listening to the Boom of the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you good conversation and information about the City of Surprise and Jim's efforts and what he's doing now and the fact that he's going to go rock and roll in the band later this weekend or something like that, probably. And we're glad to have him here, and we'd like to encourage you to come back at some point in the future. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out at boomerandthebabe.com and see everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, and we'll talk to you again at the next show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
listening to the Boomin' the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.